Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we're getting buffalo on beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading Butcher's Crossing by John Williams.
Not the Star Wars guy.
I still hope you cut music of his into the episode.
You can absolutely not cut music into it.
Want to get sued?
You know what? If that would mean people listen to us. Imagine John Williams, the guy's like, that's not me. And he listens, he's like, this podcast is interesting.
Oh, it would be Warner Music Group that did it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's bad.
All right, I'm starting with a beer. So this is by Tox Brewing in collaboration with Little House Brewing, as
did
in Little
say,
House on the Prairie.
Did you say Cox?
No, it's Tox.
Oh, because that's a word.
Sounds like toxic. I don't know why you would name a brewery after that, but whatever. I've never heard of this before. Anyway, this beer is called Chips and Dip.
Oh,
because
gross.
It is a sour ale brewed with mango, hot peppers, key lime, lime zest, tortilla chips, and sea salt.
Why?
That's odd.
It has a very odd smell. Much this like the men is... after the whole winter where they hadn't bathed. Okay, this is weird. Woo.
This is like chips.
Are you getting more of the dip or the chips?
Well,
what kind of dip is it?
The one thing it doesn't have is tomatoes, so there are no tomatoes in here.
Oh, good. I was worried.
Like, I was hoping it was like an artichoke spin dip.
Oh.
I'm actually really earthy.
I'm really disgusted that you called it a spin dip. A
spin dip,
like
baby.
You're really tight with it. Like you go way back.
I don't have time to say dip. All the syllables in spinach dip. We got places to be.
I need to keep piling cholesterol into my mouth. I can't say it.
Anyway, you can definitely taste the lime.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I mean, I guess that's what I'm good. Getting. It's a sour ale with lime.
That is the least offensive ingredient. So.
It's better than tasting like chips and dip, probably.
There is a little... Okay, so maybe it's a tiny bit spicy, but only the tiniest bit. What you actually get is more of the, like, vegetable of the jalapeno.
Did you buy the mild version or the hot?
Picante.
there weren't choices. There was only one.
Maybe you're supposed to pour it into a dip and eat it that way. Do you have a Tostitos around?
Is there solid matter at the bottom of the can? Is there salsa in there?
I don't think so.
Oh, God.
How much pico is in there?
What's the ratio of pico to de gallo that you are feeling?
The duality of pico and gallo.
There's no such thing as separation. They are one.
Those are later characters in the Street Fighter series. Gallo and
That'd
pico.
Be a great wrestling tag team partnership. Pico and De Gallo.
If that has not been done in one of those luchador Mexican, you know, like wrestling series, then they, I don't know what they're doing.
That would have been a character in Nacho Libre, for sure.
Pico the Gallo. So none of this has to
what
do
did you, why
this
did you have
book.
That beer for this?
So, first, it's vaguely Western, but only the tiniest bit. Also, the one of the breweries is called Little House Brewing, as in Little House on the Prairie, because it starts out on the prairie.
I thought it was like a buffalo chips kind of reference.
That's what I thought. Nate, just say yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And when they get out, they're like, guys, we got to go home. We got to dip.
Jesus Christ. So this book is from 1960, and it's by John Williams, who, if you've heard of him, it's probably because of our podcast. We helped put him on the map with Stoner. No, that was the book that was the book that brought him to everyone's consciousness. And then everybody who was a book nerd read that book about 8 years ago, or starting 8 years ago. And they actually made a movie of this like last year.
I saw that. I was looking this up, and they said they made a fucking movie.
With Nick Cage.
That's so weird.
Of Stoner?
Apparently not very... Of this.
Of Buffalo's Butcher's Crossing?
Yeah.
Yep.
I almost said Buffalo's Crossing.
Same thing.
That's actually a weird sex thing that's unfortunate when you Buffalo cross someone. Nate, do you know what it means when a man buffalo, two men buffalo cross?
It's when two guys do the goat and they fight.
But you have to bend down more to make like a hump.
Yeah, apparently it's not a very good movie, which I'm not surprised about, because this is not a film kind of thing.
It did have to change quite a bit.
And if you saw The Revenant, you got the vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit sucks out there. Don't go.
So we'll get to that later. I think there's a lot of stuff to say, but let's go through the plot real fast. So it starts off, John Williams, he is from, he's famous for Stoner, this and two other books, but one that he disowned. And
he was like a literature professor.
He wasn't just like one, Jimmy. He was one. He was a literature professor.
If he was or just pretending.
No, he played one on TV. Now he was an actual literature professor, and if you look at his bibliography, it's pretty brief. Normally, you look up an author and you're like, "Wow, they also wrote this weird other random piece of shit." He wrote 4 books, 2 books of poetry, and he edited an anthology of Renaissance poetry. That's it. And
so, just like the character in Stoner.
Stoner was...
And each of the books is a different genre.
Yeah. I started reading the introduction, and then I stopped in the middle because it was giving away a lot of the plot. So,
yeah, it did.
But it sounds like
his Western.
Let's talk about John Williams later, actually. I'm sorry, I brought that up. Yeah. So it starts off...
For context, it matters.
So the main character is William Andrews, which are 2 first names almost, and he is from Boston. And it's like it's like after the Civil War. It's 1870 something. And he goes out west to learn about the West.
Because he hates life in Boston, which is fair.
Imagine how much more it sucked without indoor plumbing, Jimmy.
Not much more. I've seen those people.
So he comes from Boston. And he takes the railroad for about 19 and a half days to get out west. And they're in vaguely near Colorado. I don't know if it's really clear where they are.
I thought they were somewhere in Kansas or some shit.
Yeah, that's vaguely near Colorado.
It doesn't say, there is a reference to, next time I go down to St. Louis, then it's so they're somewhere out there.
They're out in the Midwest territories.
But they're in a town, and if you didn't know the name of the town, if you know that game where if you watch a movie and they say the name of the movie and you clap or take a shot or do something stupid, that's an obnoxious game people do sometimes. If this was a drinking game, you would die in the first chapter of the book.
It's like Harry Potter.
Yeah, it is. Did I send you that video where it's Harry Potter, but every time they say the title Harry Potter, the movie speeds up? So it's 6 minutes long. So they're in Butcher's Crossing, which is what you picture as a Wild West town. It's got a saloon and a bunch of whores and horses and sidewalks made out of wood and stairwells on the side of buildings and no railings and people walking around with guns. It's like the Wild West. And this is where Andrews shows up. And he seeks out this guy that his father knew.
Old MacDonald.
Old friend.
Who had a farm.
He had one. Now he doesn't. Now he's in a different business. But with animals.
God damn it.
I'm going to get rid of all these cows and chickens and just do buffalo, baby.
And he finds him and he's like, listen, my dad said to find you. He's like, who the fuck was your dad again? And his dad was a preacher, a Unitarian preacher. Not that matters too much right at this point in the book.
This is a heavy literary guy, so it might.
It probably does. And he's like, yeah, I told my dad I was coming out west, and my dad said, bye, son. And I was like, that's what I'm looking for, Dad. And then he came down here, and he said, go find old MacDonald. And MacDonald's like, all right, you want to work for me? I need a guy doing paperwork, and you went to Harvard for 3 years. Which means in about 119 years, you'll pay off that student debt. So, and he's like, no, I don't want an academic life. And this is very frustrating for me, this part of the book, because it was not the first time throughout the book, honestly, that it reminded me of Cormac McCarthy
Oh, it definitely did.
The characters don't fucking speak directly. And he's like, I want to ask you about this country. What? What's it like? Like, he just wants to know. Like, he's a city boy.
He's a fucking kid who has left, you know, city life because he thinks, like, I hate this. I will venture out west and let the land make a man of me. And he's like,
make my fortune.
Good kid. Don't do that. You're not cut out for this. He's like, no, I'm going to do that. He's like, man, please don't do that. Just sit here. You can do my papers. No one else can read. You've got it made out here, man. Just fill out the papers for me. I hate adding. It's like, no, I want to see the country. It's like, no.
I need you to add up the buffalo kills. The answer is always, how many left? Zero. There's no remainder.
Because McDonald is in the buffalo trade. He's got teams of hunters that go out, kill the buffalo, and skin them, and then he sells the skins to people who make fashion out of it. And it's like the big thing everybody needs. They're just
buffalo chic.
Fucking thousands of buffalo skins just cannot get enough.
And it must smell so bad. Just these rotting skins.
Well, I mean, most of the dead bodies are far away because once you get the skin off, it's, you know.
Well, even the skin while it's curing must smell pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so does everybody. Because when he gets there, he's like, I need to have a bath.
The horror smelled.
It's like, oh, I'll bring a bottle, a bucket of water to your room and you can stand in it and rub yourself and like peel the layers of dirt off your body.
And 5-star saloon.
And then a lady with a visible wart will give you a handy. It's like, ah, this is the West.
This is God's country.
Come out here. Because he doesn't, he wants to discover himself. You know, he's out in the world now. He's a man. He's trying to figure out what it means to be a person and find his own way. So he'll try anything once.
Back, this is very different. We can't really empathize with this. In our lives, the closest we came to this was that time you tried to grow a goatee. And you're like, is this me? Let me try this on for a little while.
No, you look and like he, evil Spock.
Yeah, you just look like a fucking, like my lame brother. it's like a monkey's paw wish where I got into playing D&D early. But
as opposed to later.
Yeah, later when I knew to mutton chops were the way to go. A real, I just forgot. What is it called? The dungeon, a DM, a real DM that never have a goatee.
Mm, yeah.
So he goes and McDonald's like, dude, you know who you need to talk to? You need to talk to this other guy, Miller. And Miller is a dude who's gone out and hunting. He's the only one who won't hunt for me because he's a salty old fucking asshole.
But he also won't get you killed out there.
Yeah, he's competent, we think. Where would I find him? Oh, there's only one place in town. You'll find him there. Oh, thank you. That's
convenient.
Be careful,
though, because there are two rooms in it. So check the other one if he's not in the one.
He might be.
Which is what happens. He goes in there, like, where's the guy? He's like, oh, he's probably in the other room. And yeah, he was there.
That's so true. But you know what they have there?
A beer.
They have a bunch of beers.
No, they probably just have one.
He drinks a beer, and then he goes in and they find Miller, and then they have whiskey and more beer. They have a lot of beer at the saloon, which must have been fucking horrendous beer. Unrefrigerated beer that had been shipped over by rail from God knows where, how long ago.
By cart.
It must have been terrible. Because there's no railroad nearby. What's his name? McDonald is like, dude, just hang out. They're going to build a railroad stop nearby soon, and this is going to take off. And I'm staking out land, and I'm investing. I'm speculating, and then I'll be rich as shit. And the guy's like, nah, I'm not interested in your old West stock options. I want to, rough it. But he finds Miller, and he's like, can I have a minute or maybe 90 minutes of your time to talk about shit? this is a beer called that we've had. We must have had this like 10 times before.
Oh yeah,
90 minute IPA from Dogfish Head, which has been rebranded. I mean, it's still
What?
And this is like the packaging of it is different.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what's crazy? When this beer first came out in like 1997 or something like that, it was a one-off in a big bomber of a bottle. Like it was like a special beer. That's how different beer was then. 9% alcohol IPA. It's crazy. And now I drink this as my Tuesday beer.
For me, Tuesday it was morning. A Tuesday.
Exactly. and it's still great. It still is actually excellent. So he goes and he meets Miller, who was a big gruff guy with a beard.
And his friend Charles Hoagie.
Well, the sandwich king of Kansas.
I'm sure it's pronounced Hodge, H-O-G-E, but I'm going to just pronounce it Hoagie.
Hoagie.
I like that better.
You did an audiobook this? You read
nope, no.
Does that even exist?
I bet it does now. All of his books were republished in the last couple of years. They had fallen out of print, and then they were republished by the New York Review of Books, or whatever the hell that publisher is called, that series.
And his friend Hoagie only has one hand because
he's the other one that's holding a sandwich at all times. That's why they call him Hoagie.
Well, why does he have one hand though? I mean,
he's in the club.
He had an accident with his hand because he was
with a deli slicer.
Yeah, a deli slicer. No, he was out on the hunt, and he was out in the winter, and he fell, and his glove fell off, and then his hand got frostbite, and so they had to cut it off. They're like, man, that hand's got to go. It's been iced out. I was going to wait till later in the plot, but that's so far away. So,
yeah.
This is called Iced Out. It's a cold IPA. Yes, it is. That's 7%.
Fake
and
style
it's from beer. A new brewery called Crooked Stave. I mean, new to us. I don't know.
That name sounds familiar.
Not new at all. But from Colorado, which is where a lot of this book takes place.
I think Crooked Stave is known for their sours, I think.
This is interesting. I don't understand what makes a cold IPA.
It's lager, basically.
I don't know what that fucking means.
Okay, so if we really want to get into the beer stuff that nobody likes, except that one guy who emailed us, the two major types of beer are ale and lager.
That I know.
Well, do you know what the difference is?
The bubbles go up or the bubbles go down?
Kind of, yeah. but top or bottom flocculating yeast are the terms.
Oh, I didn't know but your mother was involved.
Well, actually, no. Your mother was as the bottom. She was the bottom of the scrotum. Low woman on the scrotum pole. So the major difference is the type of yeast, which is ale yeast at the top and lager yeast at the bottom. Fine. Mm. But the other thing is the temperature at which you ferment the beer. That's another major
so
part. And how long
cold.
You do it. And ales, you ferment at a temperature closer to room temperature, though depending on your, you know, if you're a home brewer or whatever, it's not quite that warm. Whereas lagers are fermented at a much colder temperature. And that creates the cleaner, or helps, contributes to the cleaner flavor of a lager. So cold IPAs, A as in ale, are ales that are fermented at a much, much colder temperature to create a cleaner flavor profile. Why?
Well, I mean, it does taste pretty clean. I mean, you know, you're out of shit to do. You got to try new stuff.
I feel like you don't, though, because there's a million types of hops, and you could change the quantities of them a million different ways. You know, there are infinite variety. If nobody made a new type of hop today.
Well, this is dry hopped with Brew Point One, Vic Secret, and Why Mia. Why Mia, said Mario sadly.
A blue turtle shell.
So they're at this table, and they're like, what's up, city kid? You look like you're too clean to be here ever. And he's like, might I interest you in a chat, good sir? And he's like, look at this fucking Boston kid. Fuck.
Where did I pack my wagon?
Yeah.
It's like, we're going out hunting the buffalo. It's like, fuck the Bills. No, no, it's not what we're doing. That's not
Pats.
What we're talking about.
Pats.
And he's like, tell me about this land, good sir. And they're like, you're a city boy, ain't you? And he's like, what gave it away? was it my monocle? And he's clearly.
I can't smell your penis from here. Which is a plot point.
Spoilers, Jimmy.
Spoilers. He has the least smelly penis in town.
They're like, what do you want? And he's like, I'll buy some beer and you tell me about things. But it's like they're speaking, it's like they're talking, it's like he's trying to bribe them or something. You know, like no one will say what they really mean.
Because he is inexperienced city idiot and they are conning him.
Are they? One of them is, I mean, he's like kind of Ahab-ish. He's like, this is my chance to get my fucking...
Well, yeah, I mean, he says, you know, I've been thinking about going to this place, you know, but I haven't really thought about doing it this time. Maybe next year or something I'll go. I don't know. I haven't really been putting any real thought into it.
Oh, everything about that scene, you think this kid's about to get ripped off. But miraculously, he doesn't. Not in the way you expect.
I mean, he is utilized. He's not used, but he is utilized.
Is that like CIA language?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't like...
We honeypotted him.
They took advantage of the fact that he was there and he had a bunch of money and he didn't know what the fuck he was doing and he was charmed by this idea, whereas, you know, they can't do without him. And, you know, they go back to McDonald's and like, that old thing, he's been talking about that shit for years. What the fuck? Because he knows about a secret place back in... up in Colorado. He ran across this valley, a secret valley, that has just bursting with
it's
buffalo.
The Hidden Valley Ranch of buffalo.
It's more like Hidden Valley Buffalo Dip because of all the fucking buffalo.
Well, you need the ranch for the buffalo wings, though.
That's true.
So the Miller tells Andrews to, like, here, just give me $600 and I'll go get all the supplies and I'll be back in a couple days.
Well, what he says is, I can get everything. How much? And the kid's like, how much do you think it's going to cost? And he goes, how much do you have? And this dumb shithead's like, I got like $800. And he's like, well, it's probably like $600. And this is where you think he's going to just steal the money from the kid. And you're like, good for you. This kid's a fucking moron. But didn't you feel like that, Nate, reading it? Like,
I thought he was going to get ripped off. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know where it was going.
I didn't think he was going to get ripped off, but I thought it was clear, like, they were, like, playing him a little bit. Like, they saw a chance to, you know, do this thing they wanted to do but never had the money for because, you know, prostitutes and whiskey are expensive. Because the one-handed guy drinks whiskey like it was water.
Well, one of the themes of Western novels is that the West is only for the tough and that the weak just don't survive. And so the kid there is obviously, like, you know, he's very young. He's from Boston. He was in college. You know, he is a weakling compared to these men.
He can read.
So, yeah, total weakling. So anyway, he gives him some money and Miller comes back a couple days later with a cart. Eight oxen to pull the cart.
Eight oxen,
like, literally.
They're playing Oregon Trail.
They are. And then he's like, how much should I in? And he gets 1 ton of lead and 1/2 ton of gunpowder. Nor was it the way around.
It's a lot of bullet making material because he will make his own bullets.
It was literally like 2,000 pounds of lead. And I was like, what? That's crazy. And then I get some beans and some coffee and some whiskey. And then they set off. And then
he has to meet Francine.
Oh, that's right.
Because he's like, hey, you're a real pretty lady. And everyone's like, dude, that's a prostitute. And he's like, oh, but she's still pretty, pretty cool. I like her. And then, you know, before they leave, he's like, I'm going to go
off. For enough money, she'll like you.
Yeah. For not that much even. And, you know, before they go off, he's like, hey, what's cooking, good looking? And she's like, I'm a prostitute. And he's like, yeah, that's cool. What's that like? She's like, you want to find out? And he's like, oh! And he runs away because he is an inexperienced lad.
Well, she says to him, I just want to fuck you for free.
Yeah, because you're...
I just like you.
I can't smell your dick at all. Like, everyone else here is dirty and gross and old and weird. And that guy's got one hand. And everybody else has got, you know, not enough toes or teeth. And you're a nice, pretty boy. And it's nice to mix it up once in a while. But he's too chaste. Because he's not yet a man. Because he went to Harvard.
She's like, sometimes you just have to say YOLO. And he's like, it's pronounced Yale. And I hate them.
And I did not slum it there. I'm a Harvard man. Go Pats.
I wrote for the Lampoon.
Yes, I have poon.
It's the only poon I'm interested in.
So he doesn't fuck Francine. He just leaves.
He runs away.
He does run away. He's like,
literally runs. He's like, how can I hide for 4 days from that woman?
Oh my God, where's your peener? And he runs.
Is your vagina running? Because you better catch it.
Miller gets back. He's got a team of oxen, cart, like a wagon. A bunch of lead.
8 million bullets.
A bunch of lead, and then
a real sassy guy.
Skinner. And a guy, and a German guy who's an
Gunther Schneider, or whatever the fuck his name was.
Skinner, who's really does, is like, wait, you're going where? No. You didn't tell me where it was we were going, but now I don't want to go. It's like, come on, let's just go. So he goes.
He's going to be the main Skinner. You could say he's the principal Skinner.
He's the four Skinner. Because they said, you know, we're going to go. I do all the shooting. One hand here is the camp man, which apparently is the position. And we need a guy who skins buffalo. And you can, like, learn how to skin them because you got to, like, do something. He's like, all right, I'll get you some nice knives and I'll get a good Skinner. And he comes back with this guy who's like, we're not going up there. That place sucks ass. He's like, I'll give you a good chair.
He shits on every element of the plan.
There's no one up there. There's nothing to shoot up there. I want a flat fee, $60 a month. I don't care about no share. I don't think it's worth it. It's like, all right, that's cool, man. And then they set off on a journey.
Because Miller's promising not just to go hunting. He's like, I know about some secret primordial herd that has been the untapped.
It's herd with the in the middle, like the herd.
Yes, it's the original one. And that's, god damn you.
I think the herd is a end table at IKEA.
I was going to say, I think that's a band that opened for Fish for a couple of years.
That's Husker Du.
Husker Du?
Husker Du?
It has fucking umlauts over everything.
And that's not an end table at IKEA?
It is. But it's got a built-in lamp.
Can I just say something that bothered me through the whole book? You know, part of this book is it's, you know, dispelling the smell and the dispelling the romanticism of the West, right? Mm. Or like the Western.
Yes.
And it's very realistic. You know, there's the guy with no hand and they're fucking toothless hillbilly people that are like, oh my God, what's wrong with him? They just eat beans and coffee.
And bacon.
There should be just every three paragraphs. And then Miller violently shat everywhere should be a passage. Just, and then he had to lean off of his horse and spray diarrhea horrendously because he had just been eating bacon, beans, and coffee for 2 days.
For 3 weeks?
That's all they eat. They should have just been shitting the entire book.
So there is a scene in Blazing Saddles.
Of course.
Inspired by this, where the cowboys, they just sit around and fart. They're just sitting around the fire, just farting. And Mel Brooks was like, look at what they eat. That must have been what it was like.
These guys must have, you know, have you ever seen that video of the bear that has like the tapeworm hanging out of its ass? That's what these guys' colons must have been like, because they're just exploding from the inside.
Actually wore regular cloth pants, but by the time they were done wearing them for a while, the farts had tanned them into leather.
It's just, I was reading it, part of it, I was in the bathroom. I was like, you know, taking care of business. And I got to get some reading done. It's like, I couldn't have, if I was eating what these guys ate, I could have been reading a Moby Dick a day. Like, they're just horrible, uncontrollable shits the whole time. It's like, yeah, the West
you
really
don't like the pure stay. Fiber diet?
Just, it's the only way you could recreate this in the modern world is if you just ate, you know, pure bran and had an enema every 90 minutes.
Ass dialysis.
is that a song by
I think
Dream
it's
Theater? What is that?
It's a Rammstein album.
Du hast.
Du hast du shit.
Du schast. That's obviously what it is.
Du schast mich. Du schast.
Du schast in your pants.
Finally set out, and they're gone for like 3 days, and they're already out of water.
3 days is 411 shits in, by the way.
Yes, but they're already
out of
water.
They're so dehydrated.
They will have dysentery. It's fucking Oregon Trail.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, I was thinking this was going to be the Donner Party. I was really thinking this is either the Revenant, when I was reading the book, this is either the Revenant or the Donner Party, but the Revenant hadn't come out yet, so.
No, this was Everybody Poops.
So anyway, they can't find water. You know, they're running out of water and everybody is completely like dying of thirst. The oxen are dying of thirst and they're not even like a quarter of the way there yet. They're like barely started and it's already going terribly. And Miller is like, we'll find water. I know. We'll find it tomorrow for sure.
He has elected to take the overland route rather than follow the river because it would be quicker. He's like, no, I know this land. I know there's water up ahead.
Which is exactly what they did in the Donner Party. They're like, oh, this guy says there's a shortcut through the pass. And then they got stuck in the winter. So it kind of was the Donner Party. So, and then when they're just when they're about to die of thirst, they find some water and then it's okay. And then that was like the exciting thing for that chapter. And then eventually they do a bunch of traveling Oregon Trail style. And then they eventually make it to. And they like make it to the mountains and they're like going through the mountains and Miller is like, I know it's around here somewhere, my Hidden Valley ranch. And he's looking around and then eventually he finds it.
And there's a fuckload of buffalo there.
He eventually finds it and like set up camp and he like gets there and he's so excited and he takes out his lead and starts melting it. Cause this is back before like bullets and that like fully made cartridges existed, you had to make your own. So he had to melt down the lead and then, you know, put in the powder and then put it all in the casing and stuff like that. So he had this whole thing. Yeah, this whole thing where he had to do that, but he's like so excited. And then they go out, we're going to go and hunt some now. And the Skinner guy is like, don't shoot too many, like, or else I'll be up all night skinning them all.
Because you can't just leave them out there. You have to take the skin off while they're still relatively freshly dead. Otherwise, the rigor sets in. And ripping the skin off at that point is apparently a lot of work. I'm basing that on this book and this book alone. I don't know anything about it, but it makes sense. They're still relatively pliable when they're fresh.
Mm-hmm. Supposedly. I mean, I didn't know anything about it.
It makes sense.
Assuming John
Williams.
I've
never skinned any buffalo. I've definitely skinned a few people, and that does tend to be how it works.
So they go, and Miller, he is just loves killing. He goes out, and he, like, just shoots one. At first, he, like, he's got to shoot the bull, because if you shoot the, like, the pack, they're the herd leader, then they won't all run away, because they won't have anyone to lead them. And then he just shoots so many of them, and his, like, face is, like, covered in powder, but he just loves it. And he's, like, tells Andrews, go get me my other gun, because the one he was using was overheating.
Which is hard to do.
And he does, and he's like trading off, and so Miller's like cleaning it out, he just won't stop. It's like as fast as he can reload, he's just shooting another one, and this was just the first day.
He kills 135 buffalo in the first day.
And that's just like the afternoon of the first day.
And all these buffalo are like in this valley where they're just, he's shooting a bunch of them and they're eventually moving into the valley deeper and deeper, but there's no way out on the other side, so they will have to just come back. So they basically have them in this pit where they can just shoot them as much as they want before they escape.
And the sounds of the shots doesn't seem to really like scare them very much.
They seem to be dumb creatures.
And nor do they seem to notice when he like a bunch of them are just lying there dead. They just kind of aren't that concerned.
He fell asleep.
I mean, they're like herd animals, so I guess they get confused easily. I'm not a buffalo doctor. I don't know.
No one is, because we killed all of them. That's fine.
We did, yes.
They brought them back. They're coming back now.
Which is why he had to go to this valley, because the rest of the buffalo are dead.
There is a point when they're looking, when Schneider shits shit on everything. Because he's German. He's pessimistic. He's like, I bet a Jew told you that. But he's like, hates on everything. And then he's like, look at this fucking, right here. This is where they came through. You could see a whole shit ton of them were right here. And he's like, by God, they did. Schneider's like, holy fuck, yeah. Buffalo. Like, these are, like, they, you know, I was trying to understand, like, and trying to remember from middle school when I last learned about the Great Plains. People basically wiped those creatures out, which had existed in astronomical numbers.
There were like millions of them.
So the Native Americans used to hunt them, but didn't hunt them in giant numbers. You know, it would, but enough to also, sort of like,
yeah, because the Native American tribes that were hunting them lived in groups of like 100. You know, they weren't, so if you kill one, everybody eats for a few days. Like, you don't need to kill.
Well, they killed them for food and other things.
And for all their products, because they had no, you know, industrial anything else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So Native Americans had been,
it was their like source of everything. Those
hunting
those
them for,
trips.
You know, in small numbers, though, but for many thousands of years. But then the Native Americans, they just die of all these epidemic diseases that Europeans brought over. And so before even meeting all the Native Americans that lived in these central plains, were like, their numbers were so much lower, which meaning in like the century after the century between all the Native Americans died and then the European, like, you know, the Western settlers get there to like the middle of America, the buffalo herds were gigantic. They were so much bigger. So they really were huge, just so many millions. But they were all hunted to near extinction in 15 years, 20 years.
But they did it not only because of their skins, but also to starve the natives that were left. They would
just also to force them to adopt yeah. to, because this is also the same time as like the Homestead Acts and shit like that, right? Like, weren't they trying to force the natives, you know, through their
they were breaking the latest round of treaties, saying, this is yours forever. We promise, until 10 years later, it was like, actually,
we found something vaguely valuable there.
Get the fuck out.
But they were trying to force the Native Americans to adopt a quote-unquote American lifestyle. Like, you should become a farmer.
Or die.
Own a piece of land. Well, yeah. When this, that was the stick. The carrot was farm labor.
Yeah.
an interesting carrot.
Yeah. So through that and, you know, killing them for just skins and leaving the meat out to rot, they were almost wiped out, despite running half the country.
I mean, you've seen those pictures where it's like a pile of buffalo skulls. It's like 40 feet high. And it's just
like
skulls.
The graveyard in The Lion King.
Yes. That's everything the light touches is our kingdom, except for that part. And that's why we had to kill them all.
Mm.
This is also not to defend this behavior. But this is also like just when humans realize species don't live forever. They like, I don't think every individual hunt buffalo guy was like, I'm going to kill all these buffalo and they'll never come back. Like, that was their job. People didn't seem to understand yet. Oh, you can kill them all and they won't come back anymore. Like,
yeah.
People are, it's just like just when like the dinosaur shit is happening or people are finding these bones and they're like, wow, there used to be other things that aren't here anymore. And Darwin's ideas are you know, farther,
the concept,
you know, more
of extinction in that way.
Yeah, so like, what do you mean? If I just kill them all that I see now, they'll be more later.
They'll emerge from the earth as we all do.
Yeah, just like salamanders come out of fireplaces. Everyone knows this. I mean, it's just, it's a crazy thing to think about, and not in any way meant to defend what their actions were, but to see, like, people really, until shockingly recently, didn't understand that we couldn't just take every single thing we saw.
Well, it's also, and, at this time, you know, people were more religious in the sense that God gave us this earth to use as we see fit. Everything here, the land, the animals, are ours to fuck with. They're here for us. So why wouldn't I kill all of them?
And God set it up in a way to work for us. So, like, if we kill them, there'll be more when we need them later.
It's like a button you push and ham pops out.
You could get buffalo now, and it tastes just like fucking ground different. Beef. It's a gimmick.
Are buffalo and bison the same thing? Is it squares and rectangles situation?
Yeah, it is. Because there's like water buffalo in Africa, and that's a totally different thing.
Okay.
But like all
so American
all
bison
are the American thing.
Okay.
All bison are buffalo, but not all buffalo are bison.
I don't know if I've ever seen one in real life. Maybe at the
They're astronomically massive. Large. They're ridiculously big. They're like 6.5 feet tall at the hump.
Which is what the song is about by Fergie.
Yeah, she was a staunch Native American rights activist. Everyone forgets that about the Black Eyed Peas. There is that. But the hump thing, do you know why that's there? Do you know why they have that giant hump on their fucking... It's just the knot. It's the knot of muscle that's necessary to hold up its fucking enormous head. The buffalo head is like 100 pounds.
Well, they barely have it. They have like almost no neck at all.
But to hold up the head, like that's it, like, so you know, like people who like lean forward all the time on their at their computer job, and they get that weird little hump on their. Yeah. It's the same. That's basically what a buffalo has.
That's so weird.
So they get there, and Miller just fucking loves killing. He just will not stop. It's 135 just on the afternoon of the first day, and then there's a very gruesome chapter where Andrews is learning how to skin them and basically can't do it, and he like fucks it up. Oh, and you slit under here, and you take this off, and you do that, and
cut around its balls.
Yeah.
And then you get on your horse and pull the skin off with a rope.
Very intense. And Andrews, he just like can't handle it. Or he just can't do it. He eventually learns how to do it, but at first he can't. And then
I imagine the first time you skin anything, it's pretty difficult.
It's delicate work.
And they send him to like take one of the calves to back to camp so they can eat it. So they can eat something other than beans. And then he like totally and just pukes
please,
everywhere.
My asshole is chafed. Anything.
And then Miller and Schneider eat the raw liver. And he's like, what the fuck, guys? And it turns out you have to do that. Because otherwise you get what they call the buff sickness, which I guess is, you know, just if you don't
scurvy.
If you eat
that's
just,
what the Liver King has.
Yeah, basically, like they were getting scurvy at some point, so they must have to eat the stuff. Like, you know, you can't eat polar bear liver, but I guess buffalo liver is safe enough.
So then like weeks go by, like a month goes by, and they have just killed thousands and thousands of buffalo and just like skinned them and set their hides out to like dry out and stuff like that. And Schneider is like, we have enough, like we should go back. We can't even carry all, like they couldn't even carry half of them. And Miller's like, no, we kill them all. And so they're there, and after they've been there for a month, then it starts snowing. First, there's a giant snow. There's like a blizzard. And it's probably like October or something like that.
But they are in the Rocky Mountains, so it's can't be good.
And there's like a 3-day blizzard that they only like barely survive by wrapping themselves in buffalo skins.
The fresh skins.
Yeah, with the fresh skins. And like, they were afraid that everything's going to die, but it doesn't. So luckily they don't. But then, and so when the snow blizzard is over, and it's like, well, how, because you can't like run your car, they can't run the wagon back through like 12 feet of snow. So they just, it's like, in Andrews is like, well, so how are we gonna get out of here? And Miller is like, well, 3 or 4 weeks of warm weather would definitely melt all of this. But we're not going to get 3 or 4 weeks of warm weather because it's going to be winter. So we're just going to have to be here till the snow melts. So welcome to 6 months, to you, to the next 6 months of your life. Just hanging out here, doing nothing. And Schneider's like, God damn it, I told you we should have gone back. And then the book jumps 6 months later till the
Thank God, finally,
snow finally starts to thaw. Finally, like the snow is starting to melt and they start getting ready. And then the snow melts enough that they pack the cart with as many hides as they can carry, which isn't that many. They manage to find all the oxen. They're not dead. And they kind of like corral them and
they have to retame their horses because they had escaped and they'd gone feral because they've been gone for so long.
Yep. And so they like start going back down the mountain with their hides and like through the cart, and the wagon is going to like tip over at any time because it's so top heavy, but it doesn't because they have like all these ropes. And then they get back to the river, a river that they crossed earlier in the, you know, in like late August. It was just a tiny trickle, but now it's this huge rush. It's like this huge, you know, because now it's the spring and all the snow is melting. And so they're trying to cross. So they're like, they find a place to cross and then they cross. But then this is where the title of the book comes back because, you know, they killed all these buffalo. So it's like they're butchers. And here they are crossing a river that doesn't go well. And so they try and cross, and a rushing log, first it like, you know, so the horses are going through, and it's like the water is like up to the halfway up the horse. The log kills,
Schneider.
Like a log in the river kills the horse and Schneider, and they just like, they're just gone. But then
the horse kicks him in the face.
Oh, that's right, yeah. But then the horse like, you know, is swept away by the water and into the wagon, which then tips over and gets washed away by the river.
With their 850,000 skins.
It's like 1,500 skins, which were supposed to be sold for $4 a piece. So that was, you know, 6 Gs after an investment of 600. Pretty good return. And also, you know, that's a lot of money to lose back then. $6,000 back then is the equivalent of $36 million today.
Give or take.
And they're like, ah, fuck. Well, we'll go back to town and we'll just hire more. We'll just hire another wagon so that we can go back and get the rest of the skins. We don't have to hunt them anymore because we killed them all, but at least we can get the rest of the skins. So they like finally ride back into town, back into Butcher's Crossing. And it's like a ghost town. There's almost nobody there. Old McDonald's shack is like empty. There's like empty. The door is just hanging open. Everything is like their papers are just scattered everywhere. And I was like, what is going on? And they go around and they finally talk to a whore who is like, oh, everybody's gone. And they're like, no, first, like, where is it? Oh, but McDonald's? Yeah, he's still living in the hotel out back. So they find him. McDonald, and he's like, where's our money? And McDonald's like, what money? There's no one wants these hides anymore. I've lost everything. See the 10,000 hides I have stacked outside my old shack? Nobody wants them. They're worthless. If you had come back in the you know, early winter, like I thought you would, then I would have bought them all because then I thought they were worth something. But even though I agreed to pay you for all your hides, I can't do that now. I have no money. I have nothing. Everything is worthless. Nobody wants these hides anymore. And they're like, oh,
this is when they discovered polyester. But like, why did they get rid of, why did they lose interest in the hides? Like, what happened there?
They're no longer fashionable.
I think, well, probably either the market was flooded because of just the millions of hides being, you know, all hunted at the same time.
It was based on a real thing. It was the buffalo hides were used to make like capes and shit, and they were really popular in Europe, and then they were just not popular anymore. And so suddenly all the hides became worthless. It was really just a trend. They thought this will last forever. but they hadn't heard of Zara yet, so they didn't know it was just temporary.
So it's like Beanie Babies.
Yeah, pretty much.
People thought they were going to be, oh, these things are worth so much.
The value on these can only go up.
We're going to hunt the Beanie Babies, but then they were worthless. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like everything else people have collected over the last 30 years. I was just talking to I had a play date with my kid, and the other dad, we were talking about kids' toys, and he's like, did you see, remember that G.I. Joe aircraft carrier when we were kids? Do you remember that toy? It was like the size of an actual aircraft carrier, or at least it seemed like it was, in like 1987. It was this G.I. Joe, like the USS, fuck communism, I forget what it was called, but it was like a giant aircraft carrier toy. That was like 8 feet long, and it was like $110 in 1985. Nowadays, they're like $2,000. And he's like, man, imagine you still have one. I was like, no. But nowadays, everybody buys every one of, like, any, whatever toy comes out, there's some class of people that collect them. You know? Right. So, like, oh, there's a new run of Pokemon, there's a new run of. And there's somebody who goes, I'm going to buy one of every kind. I'm going to have a whole set. Actually, I'm going to buy 10 of every kind. And when the price goes up, I'll sell it. You know, like they just collect it.
It's speculating.
Speculating, yeah. But that's exactly what these characters were doing.
So everyone is very dejected. But at least they have a bath because they have not literally bathed in 6 months. And that must smell so bad. And they're like, bring us hot water. And they get to the hotel, bring us hot water for bath. And the guy is like, oh my God, that was incredibly dirty water. I'll get you more water. And so they keep having to refill the thing. And then Andrews goes and finds Francine and then fucks her for days.
He really does.
He just doesn't leave.
Can you blame him? They gloss over the 6 months of man love.
But then in the middle of the night, he sees that there's a fire outside, and he sees that Miller has gone, and he's just set fire to everything, or at least all of McDonald's stuff.
All
his
the
shack
hides.
And all the hides. He's just burning them. He's just gone crazy. And then Andrews is like, well, that sucks. But he's like, I'm not going back home. There's nothing back home to Boston. There's nothing back home for me there. I'm a Westerner now. He doesn't use the word cowboy, but he's like, you know what? This is my life now. So he like leaves Francine in the middle of the night.
He leaves her a bunch of money.
He does leave her some money, yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, actually, I don't really do the whole, I'm not into the whole love thing, actually. And this is all, you're a prostitute. Bye.
Yep, and then leaves.
Leave your money on dresser.
Leaves and then rides west. I think he just, it's like, well, there's more frontier out there. This clearly could have been a series.
Yeah, I don't think it needed to be.
And Nate, you've mentioned many times the book, The Virginian?
The Virginian by Owen Wister.
Which until today I thought it was pronounced New York.
Wister, Mass?
But apparently Go it's Pats? West. But Owen Wister. And you said something, I've refused to read it, because I will only read that for the podcast at this point, and no one should ever read it.
No, it's quite boring, yeah. It was the first novel, like Western genre novel. There were other things before that, but this was the first like full novel. But it was dedicated to Teddy Roosevelt.
The thing I remember most is that you said that by the time that book came out, the West was closed.
Oh yeah, that vision of the West, that like idea of, you know, the rugged frontier was basically over. And that's, but we became in sort of like popular culture a thing, like the Western, starting in the very early 1900s. But it was done.
Well, this book takes place about 3 minutes before that book. The West is just about done. They've fucked it all up, or they've done what they could, or whatever, however you want to look at it. I mean, there is a part when they go out looking for the buffalo where they find rails. And he's like, holy fuck, there's rails here now? And everyone's like, oh, god damn it, that scares the buffalo away. Like, they're used to...
Well, it scares them away, but also it means that people are coming, which means anything around it
will
be dead.
But they're like, oh, shit. That means the end of our game, you know, like what we've been doing.
the great unspoiled West.
They're spoiling it. That was my job.
We can't be frontiersmen if it's no longer the frontier.
So I was thinking about that throughout this whole book. Like, oh, maybe that, you know, this book, especially when it was written in 1960, that's like the height of this, of the Western as a genre for film and television. You know, you have like Gunsmoke running on television for like 20 years.
John Wayne.
All that shit.
Bonanza.
John Williams. He was not immune to that. He had to know that was happening and is, you know, proffering a very different view of that, which might be why it wasn't a hit.
Might have been.
It was also, it was kind, of,
the characters,
kind of heady.
The characters in the book are like very tough. And, but, you know, so that part is definitely fits. But it's not romanticized in terms of like, it was so amazing and I'm so successful and everyone loves me. It's like, no, it was awful. They go and everything goes wrong. Like, they go and hunt the buffalo and they find the spot with all the buffalo and then they're stuck there for the winter for 6 months. Must have sucked so much. And so it not only it does not portray the West as this like magical, well, obviously not magical, but this glorious place where people go to become men. I mean, Andrews does kind of, I mean, he does become a man. I mean, he does become tough and then come back and fuck the prostitute.
He becomes tough, but he doesn't actually find any meaning in it. He's just still alone and now broke.
You know, and he doesn't triumph exactly. I mean, he comes back and he's broke. Yeah. He spent all of this money and now he has nothing.
Because all the other Westerns are like, this is where you go and you learn to be free. You know, society is, you know, over and go and do what you want and make your own destiny and everything's going to be great. And, you know, it doesn't really work that way in real life. The West sucked. It was miserable and a lot of people just died all the time doing basic shit.
There's the part where they pass the family early on.
Oh, yeah. Like, the Grapes of Wrath family.
Yeah.
We're going out California Jones way.
And he's like, you guys have a donkey that's got three legs. You need to turn back. And they're like, nope.
If you don't turn back, you will die. He's like, we'll be fine. And they definitely died.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, it's stop just up ahead at the next camp and then just stop there. He's like, no, we got to keep going. It's like, okay, well, you killed yourself and your kids.
I think people had no idea how big the fucking country was in some ways, you know?
It's manifest destiny. You just do it. God gave you this land to take.
Well, he did, Jimmy. He gave it to somebody, and they didn't take care of it, so we had to take it, obviously.
Yeah, from the heathens. Yeah.
Have you ever seen that, you know, that painting of manifest destiny, that fucking American Progress painting?
I have seen it, yes.
You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like Lady Liberty walking across the land? Go open it and look at the fucking Native Americans' faces. It's hysterical. They're like, oh, shit. And they're just so scared running. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look, they don't look happy.
They're running into the shadows of benighted California as progress comes from a giant woman carrying a book that says school book.
This is a really shit painting, actually.
It really is the most heavy-handed piece of crap.
Is like a fucking Stone Toss comic.
I don't know what that is.
Stone Toss is one of, he makes right-wing web comics, but he is actually a open Nazi. But people don't know that part.
Oh, I recognize this art. I've seen some of these retweeted over the years. I've seen them before, and they're always like, that's not very funny.
No, they're not funny. It's just Nazi comics.
So, what'd you guys think of this book?
It was okay. But like I said, it reminded
me
of...
it's not Oklahoma. It's Kansas.
It's Colorado.
It reminded me of The Revenant so much. Well, also, and we just recently read that Cormac McCarthy book, and it reminded me of The Revenant, and it was like, oh, okay, it's this Western thing. And it was fine. It was kind of slow in places, but yeah, and thank God it did, you know, do a whole like skip of 6 months while they're just waiting there in the winter. We didn't have to hear about every piece of snow they found. So it was a lot.
Every piece of snow.
So it was kind
of
snow, but I mean, it was kind of slow.
I loved it. Like, it was not by any means one of the greatest things I've ever read, but it was very, very good. It wasn't as good as Stoner. Also, I'm not a Western guy, except for Cormac McCarthy, though people do compare this to Blood Meridian because it's a famous Western.
I think there are a lot of things. I think it's more than, it's not that facile. There's a lot you can compare this to with Blood Meridian.
It's a less rosy-glassed, what's the fucking phrase?
Rose-colored glasses.
That's the one, with the glasses and the flowers. But yeah, it's a much maybe more realistic and less propagandistic version of Westerns. Because Westerns are largely schlock, especially the movies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But this book is, there's definitely a lot of, I mean, he's like the literary professor stereotype. So it's a lot of, you know, symbolism and all that jazz. And I thought it was very good. It was not long. It was pretty straightforward. It was an easy read, which sometimes, you know, heady books are not, but it was like attainable on a story level, but also, you know, it gets you thinking. We're like, yeah, you know, of course, like, yeah, these are the America, we're awesome, we go around and we fucking destroy everything without even thinking about it because that's what we do and everything we do is perfect and oh God, we've ruined everything, oh no, our bad. But it was like, this is like the coming of age book where actually, in the end, like, McDonald's telling Andrew's like, there is nothing like, that doesn't exist, motherfucker. Like, you don't just go out and find yourself. You grow up, it's all bullshit. You just do some stuff and then you fucking die. There's no meaning, just, there's no great cause. You're not going to make a man out of yourself by doing this stuff. You just do stuff. Do whatever works for you. There's no greater existence out here. It's bullshit. It's all lies. Everything you ever heard was bullshit. Grow the fuck up. The end. Fuck you.
So I don't know who just mentioned Blood Meridian, but reading this, I was reminded of Blood Meridian, or like a lot.
It's definitely comparable.
Which book, in offering maybe a correction to the Western image, you know, like the John Wayne Western we're making fun of, and the, you know, obviously, you know, when it's like the Native Americans, like, yellow-haired lady, come to town. Like,
sanitized,
like, it's all, you know,
Sunday morning fucking, look at the beautiful West and these intrepid exploring men. Not, it sucks out there.
Taming the land.
Yeah.
Building the railroad.
Civilizing the land.
But this was a correction. This was a different version of that. Probably more realistic. I don't fucking know. I'm not an expert, but probably closer than what people were getting in 1960, you know, showing the just rugged terribleness of them, you know, nearly dying of dehydration
and just eating beans
5 minutes
day.
Into their trip and just living in a town where the only women around are whores. And they're just like, this is all right. I came out here to be a whore because being a whore in Kansas City there was too much competition. Considered that element.
It's a big point of this whole book is there's no grand narrative here. There's no cause. People are here for money. It's just money.
Everyone's here for survival. People are here for, you know, Williams, is that his name? Fucking, no, Andrews. Andrew Williams, right? Andrews? William Andrews?
John
Williams there. Wrote it. William Andrews is in it.
Oh man, these beers are strong. He's there. On it, he's LARPing. He's fucking LARPing at being a Westerner. Everyone else is there as they're figuring, like, this is fucking rugged and terrible, and you have to do whatever it takes. There's the one-handed Bible-thumping alcoholic guy whose only skill is making beans and coffee so men shit themselves to death out on the on the trail.
Yeah.
And then they're like, yeah, we need him. That's what we got to deal with. That's the best we got out here. You know, it's just how hard and terrible it was. So, like, that element of the myth of only the tough can survive. Like, yeah, that's true. You have to be tough. But there's no nice, no glamour.
Do you know what dude ranches were?
Who?
Dude ranches? You know what dude ranches were? Like,
actual I believe ranches? It's a gay bar in Williamsburg.
Close enough. It was these ranches that like people that lived out west would set up, and city people would come to them for vacations and fucking LARP playing cowboy. So you could say like, oh, I went out west and I roughed it. But they had
I broke a horse.
Yeah, like they had these guys pretending and helping you like, yeah, this is, oh, you did a lasso. Wow, look at that. And look, this is how you like put a shoe on a horse. Like, oh, yeah. Out here getting reconnected with nature and becoming a man. But it was astronaut camp for adults, but it was cowboys. That's what dude ranch.
Astronaut camp looks fucking awesome, Jimmy. Shut your bitch ass mouth.
But when you nail the shoes onto an astronaut thing, it messes up the seal of the,
yeah,
of the
suit. But no one could hear them scream because they're in space, Jimmy.
But this was like a thing. It was people like romanticizing the West, like, oh yeah, go out there and do my thing. But it was bullshit.
I'm sure you could find some, you know, like Tacitus or someone 2,000 years ago saying, the city is full of weak people. The real people are in the countryside. I'm sure that's just like a thing. Yeah. People,
you know, it's just like, you know,
some meme, you know,
it's the same thing of, you know, every generation says like, kids these days are all shit. They won't do their homework and they pee on my feet. You know, said Tacitus.
Yeah, he did, and he's like, but he was a Roman. He's like, it's kind of hot when they.
Yeah, oh, he loved it. He's saying as a compliment, like, yeah, yeah.
It's the only way to get rid of the athlete's foot.
I've got sandal rash.
I got aqueduct rot all through my feet here
from my poo toes.
Oh God, they're just covered in lead.
Luckily, you don't live long enough to die from the lead poisoning. Lead wine and black beans and coffee.
That's so God. It's a.
You ever shit blood for 3 weeks?
So back to Blood Meridian for a second, because I was reminded of it constantly. Not just in one thing, like superficially was like the terseness of the characters, how nobody says anything.
But when they're locked in the camp for 6 months, like they barely speak to each other,
because they would kill each other. Like, yeah. It's like, oh my God. I was trying to make, like, the one guy has one good anecdote. Like, yes, and I know, yes, and he was the priest the whole time. Yeah, I get it. That's shut the fuck up. No, I know. He said, the hospital, what is it? It's a building for sick people. That's not important right now. Okay. So, but the fact that they just say things like, I came to hear talk about the out here. Okay, what's out here? I don't know. Like that felt like Blood Cormac McCarthy style, and maybe that's just copying the terseness of people who have real shit to do. I don't know time.
They
to spend talk.
A lot of time in this not doing shit.
That's by accident. I mean, they really wanted to spend it.
Yeah, I mean, even when they're traveling,
species of giant bovines,
like when they're on the horses, just we're just gonna ride horses for 3 weeks. They don't talk much.
Imagine there was like a long scene in the book where it's like, I don't know, people really think daguerreotypes are going to be the thing, but I just feel like there'll be something like tintypes or a little more portable. Just shut the fuck up. No one cares. But then, you know, of offering this other view of the West, this versus Blood Marine, they're very different books. And I think ultimately, I'll just say you should read both because we didn't understand Blood Meridian and I don't know if we understood this, but
I think we understood it. We definitely didn't get all the things, I'm sure. But I get what he's putting down.
If I had to guess, I would say the kind of more accurate version of the West is actually Butcher's Crossing. Because Blood Meridians, they really just do too much murder. I mean, it really is. They just go and murder everyone.
Well, yeah. That was a very specific thing. Though that did happen. But that was mostly in Mexico.
And it was only one guy said it happened. It's based, that historical account is like one guy. It's like, it's not like a very well-documented thing. Not to say it didn't happen, but there's like one account of the scalping missions in Blood Meridian. Like one historical thing.
Yeah.
That Cormac McCarthy was like, I'm running with that shit. So who knows how accurate that is. Historically at all, is what I'm saying.
I mean, there probably wasn't a 7 foot tall man baby.
No, we would have to wait another century to meet George Murison. But yeah, Nate's probably right about that.
Yeah, there was a lot of boring, bleak, hard times.
That's the West, baby.
Still is some of those fucking states.
Hey, we have fine patrons in some of those states.
Yeah, they're so bored they give us money.
Give the West of it to us.
Tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, DrunkGuysBC.
Go to Facebook and Instagram at DrunkGuysBookClub.
Yeah, BC, not just Buffalo Chips.
Buffalo Chips, and, which is poof.
No one's listening now, but go to Patreon. Give us the monies. It'd be nice of you. If you don't want to do it, that's cool too. We don't blame you.
And go to Goodreads.
We don't give us money.
Where we are. Reads.
Real good.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.